As we look at the reading for the text this morning, it will be coming from Romans the 8th chapter. It's Romans the 8th chapter, and I shall read the verse 18 and verse 28. For I reckon that the suffering of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. And verse 28, and we know that all things work together for good to them that loves God, to them who are the called according to his purpose.
Thank you, Brother Tommy, for that reading from Romans chapter 8. Thank you for being in our assembly today. We appreciate you following along in the Bible with us as we look at the Word of God. We're going to look at a question this morning that comes up every now and then about good things and bad things bad things happening to good people, good things happening to bad people, and it raises a lot of questions when we view circumstances in the world around us. At times we're troubled with the problem of human suffering in this life. We've all heard it numerous times. Why would a God who is all good, all knowing, and all powerful allow bad things to happen to good people? The patriarch Job posed a similar question. Why would an all good, all knowing, all powerful God allow good things to happen to bad people? In Job 21 and verse 7 and following. After all, while seeing good people suffer is horrible, it's not much fun seeing evil people having fun either, is it? Job later answered his own question by saying that, well, these people are eventually punished by God. This question is sometimes asked by people with really a genuine desire to understand and to know what really seems impossible to understand to a lot of people. And other times it's asked by people who have suffered quite a bit in this life, or whose loved ones have known a significant amount of loss or grief, problems in this life. And people honestly want to know, how could a good God let this happen to me? And how could a good God let this happen to my loved ones, members of my family? Why wouldn't God stop this pain and help me? And sometimes in life, people can experience devastating suffering. The abduction and murder of a child would be something that people would have to endure in this life, where people are free to do that sort of thing. The long and painful suffering and death of a kind and gentle person that was good in every respect of life is something that challenges our thinking. And if you haven't asked this question of other people, maybe other people have asked this question of you. How is it that bad things happen to good people? Sometimes even Christians blame God for all their troubles, I think. Their attitude seems to be, well, I prayed to God, and look what God has given me in return. Look how I've had to suffer as a result of what happens to me. And we need to be careful that we do not charge God foolishly. Job, who suffered through so very many problems, did not sin, nor did he blame God in Job 1 and verse 22. And that's characteristic of the kind of man that Job was. God was very complimentary of his faith and his fidelity, which he should be of you and I. We should be living lives of faith and fidelity to God, and he should equally be able to say of us that we did not sin nor charge God foolishly or blame God. Since man is quite skilled at assigning blame, usually to someone other than himself, will an answer come if we find out where blame belongs, if we find out who the appropriate person is to blame for difficulties and problems in life? Will that answer our question for us? Well, there's some things to think about in this subject. And I think that one of the reasons that this question comes up quite a bit and continues to come up through the years is that there's no specific one verse in the Bible that we can turn to that will provide an adequate explanation or an answer to this type of question. It takes a combination of things, a combination of verses in God's book to begin to think about these principles together, that how we might be able to answer a question like this when people ask us. So, some things to think about. In the first place, why didn't God make a world free of suffering and pain? That's a question we sometimes hear, but the fact of the matter is that He did create a world free of suffering and pain. There was no suffering or death in the world until Satan convinced man to sin against God. And then as a punishment, God expelled man and woman from the beautiful garden that He'd made for them. In Genesis chapter 3, we read of the account where Satan entered the serpent, and the serpent was more crafty than any beast of the field which God had made. And he said to the woman, "Indeed, as God said, you shall not eat of any tree of the garden." So this Satan, through this serpent, is having a conversation with the woman. And he is creating a situation where he tempts her to sin against God. And he says, God knows that in the day you eat from it, your eyes will be open and you'll be like God, knowing good and evil. But when the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was a delight to the eyes and that it was desirable to make one wise, she took from its fruit and ate. And she gave also to her husband with her, and he ate. So here's the downfall of man. Through the process of temptation, and how temptation appeals to man, and the weakness that was there, and as a result, sin against God, and they were expelled from the beautiful garden. In Genesis 3, 16 through 19, notice the result. To the woman, God said, "I will greatly multiply your pain in childbirth. In pain you will bring forth children. Yet your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you." Then to Adam he said, "Because you have listened to the voice of your wife, and have eaten from the tree about which I commanded you, saying, 'You shall not eat from it,' cursed is the ground because of you. In toil you will eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles shall grow for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you will eat bread, till you return to the ground, because from it you were taken. For you are dust, and to dust you shall return." There's suffering that comes into the world here that's pretty plain to see in Genesis 3, 16 through 19, isn't there? And who is the ultimate person responsible for that? You know, you can think about the weakness of man, but Satan was responsible in that he created the temptation, and Eve fell for that, Adam fell for that, and as a result they fell away from God. So let's put the blame where it belongs if we want to think about the suffering and the pain and the difficulty that's in the world. You know, why would we blame God for such a thing? Why don't people blame Satan for it? That's where the blame would lie, I think, rather than to blame God. So that's something for us to think about. When people raise the question, well, why didn't God just create a world without suffering? Well, He did. The suffering came upon man as a result of sin. Then another thing for us to think about is, well, am I being punished? Am I being punished as a result of this suffering? We often respond to problems by assuming that they are specific punishment for some bad things that we've done. But Jesus shows us that this is not the case. In Luke 13, beginning in verse 1, "On the occasion there were some present who reported to him about the Galileans whose blood Pilate had mixed with their sacrifices. Jesus said to them about these men, 'Do you suppose that these Galileans were greater sinners than all other Galileans because they suffered this fate?'" He's asking them this question, do you think they suffered this because they were sinners? He says, I tell you, no, they did not. And then he says, but unless you repent, you will all likewise perish. Then another question he raises of a parallel situation in verse 4. Do you suppose that those 18 on whom the tower in Siloam fell and killed them were worse culprits than all men that live in Jerusalem? In other words, he's saying this tower fell on 18 men and it killed them. Do you think that happened to them because they were worse culprits than people that live in Jerusalem? Do you think that happened to them because they were gross sinners? Do you think that happened to them because they were in violation of God's will? He says, no. I tell you, no. So there's the answer to the question. When people say, well, do bad things happen to me? Is that punishment when bad things happen to me because I've done something wrong? Well, not necessarily. Jesus pointed out in these two cases, no, it's not the case. So that's something to think about when we answer the question. And here's another thing, is it really, is what happens to us bad? We view it as bad. Is it really bad? At times we may be assuming something is bad when really it's good in the long run. It's bad when a child has to go to a doctor and the doctor nurse has to stick a needle in his arm. That's bad, isn't it? But really it's good in the long run, because what that shot does, it puts medicine in your body that takes away the bacteria or heals you, provides your body with some form of immunity for a disease or something. So that can be a good thing. Even though when the child's sitting there in the doctor's office and the nurse is taking that needle, it looks like it's big as a horse's leg, and getting ready to stick it in your arm, that doesn't look like a good thing at all, does it? So sometimes we may view something as bad when really it's good in the long run. Trials seem bad, but they can be good if we endure. That's what James said in James 1, beginning of verse 2. He says, consider it all joy. That goes against the grain. A child doesn't consider it joy, sitting in the doctor's office and the needle's being prepared for a stick. A child doesn't consider that joy, so it kind of goes against the grain, doesn't it? But James says, consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. There's the good that comes out of it. The test of your faith can produce endurance. And James further said in chapter 1 and verse 17, every good thing given and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. In this passage, he says good and perfect gifts come from God. Gifts from God. They're good and they're perfect. There's no mixture of evil with what he gives, is the idea. So let us never charge that he has given to us something that is bad. Blame the devil for the bad stuff, not God. Until he was allowed into the lives of Adam and Eve, bad things never happened. Since then, though, the world is filled with wickedness and its attendant grief. So that's something for us to think about. Is it really bad? When something works for us, that's good in the long run. Something else to think about, does God cause it? Or does God allow it? Those are two different concepts. Does God cause it or does he allow it? When problems tempt you, remember, God does not tempt us. God does not solicit us to do evil, is the idea. Notice James 1, beginning in verse 13. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, and he himself does not tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he's carried away and enticed by his own lust. When lust has conceived and gives birth to sin, and when sin is accomplished, it brings forth death. Outward trials that are mentioned by James in James chapter 1 and verse 2, the trials that we endure, that wherein we are to count it all joy, are expected in life by all men. We're foolish people if we think that we will not have to endure trials in life. We will. We will. But inner conflicts of temptation to sin are no less serious obstacles to our faithfulness. Some people attempt to hold God responsible for the trials that attack us and to accuse Him of producing the circumstances that result in hardship to us or trial to us. Adam and Eve did it in Eden. When Adam attempted to shift the blame, you remember in his conversation with God that he tried to shift the blame to God when God was questioning him, why did you eat of what I told you not to eat? He said, you know, do you realize what he said in Genesis 3 and verse 12? The woman you gave to be with me. And it's not my fault. The woman you gave to be with me. It's her fault. You see that shift of blame? The woman you gave to be with me, she gave me from the tree and I ate. That's Genesis 3 and verse 12. And you know, people have followed that pattern ever since. It's not really my fault. That person, this one over here, they did it. They enticed me. You see, that's something that people are comfortable with doing today, shifting the blame to someone else. God was said to cause the evil that happened to Job in Job 42 and verse 11. All his brothers and sisters, at the end of that book, all his brothers and sisters and all who had known him before consoled him and comforted him for all the adversities that the Lord had brought on him, the record says. But what really does that mean? In the book of Job, we learn that God caused it, not by directly doing it, but by allowing Satan to do it. In Job 1 and verse 12, then the Lord said to Satan, behold, all that Job has is in your power, only do not put forth your hand on him. So Satan departed from the presence of the Lord, and that's similar to the situation in Job chapter 2 and verse 6. So you have to dig a little bit further to see, are we talking about something that God caused upon the life of Job, or are we talking about something, a situation where God allowed Satan to test Job? And I think it's pretty clear that God allowed Satan. Satan was the source of the trouble that Job had. Job appropriately responds to the situation by not blaming God. Job 1, beginning of verse 21, he said, naked I came in from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. You know, if he was blaming God, it wouldn't be blessed be the name of the Lord, would it? It would be something quite different from that. In verse 22, through all this, Job did not sin, nor did he blame God. Do you see the very powerful implication of that statement? God is not to be blamed. That's a part of to blame God would be sin. Job didn't sin. He didn't blame God. And you and I don't have any difficulty seeing in people around us by what they say that they blame God for a lot of things, a lot of adverse things, a lot of difficulty, a lot of problems in life. People just blame God. Why should it be that way? Why is it the case? Why do you think it's right? Why is it true to you to blame God in such situations would be the question. So God doesn't directly cause problems that tempt us. He may allow other forces at work to bring them about. So you and I should be like Job and never blame God foolishly for those. So these are some things to think about. in this question that we're asked a lot of times. Why do bad things happen to good people? Or we may come up with that question on our own. Let's look at some different reasons that bad things happen. And maybe that'll help us to answer this question. The first thing to think about is that God has a purpose for man in life. Jesus said God allowed a man's blindness in order to achieve a special purpose. In the Gospel of John, chapter 9, beginning in verse 1, Jesus passed by and he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, now here's the question. You see, this question's always been around. Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he should be born blind? Now, who did the sin that resulted in the blindness of this man? That's the question that the disciples asked in verse 2 of John 9. And Jesus answered in verse 3. Here's what he said. It was neither that this man sinned nor his parents. He's telling them they have a misconception about what's going on with this blind man. Is blindness something to suffer from? Is it a trial in life? Is it a difficulty? Is it a problem? It most certainly is. Ask anyone that's blind and they'll tell you it's a struggle. Jesus said it wasn't this man that sinned. It wasn't even his parents who sinned. But notice what he said was the reason for this. But it was so that the works of God might be displayed in him. The works of God might be displayed in him. What's about to happen to this man? He's not going to walk away blind, is he? So God has a purpose, you see, sometimes, in things that to man appear to be tragic, bad, problem, difficulty. God, he can have a purpose in that that will result in something good. In the Old Testament, Joseph understood that his time serving in an Egyptian jail for something that he did not do had a positive purpose to it. In conversation with his brothers afterwards, who sold him into slavery, that started the ball in motion that landed him in an Egyptian jail. Genesis 45 and verse 5, he said to them, "Now do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life." God had a purpose that he wanted to accomplish, and it was good. And so, don't be down on yourselves because you sold me. They sold him into slavery. A similar passage is in Genesis 50 and verse 20. And he says, "As for you, you meant evil against me. Now at the time you sold me into slavery, you meant for evil to happen to me." His brothers would have killed him. And one, to save his life, came up with the concept of, well, let's just sell him in slavery and then we won't be guilty of murder. You know, fortunately, one of the brothers couldn't go quite that far. So he plainly tells them, "As for you, you meant evil against me. That's why you did it. But God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive." You see, God had a plan. Now the brothers, when they sold him into slavery, they could not care less. They could care less about God's plan. They weren't interested in finding out anything about God's plan. They weren't interested in, well, let's do this so we can be a part of God's plan. They didn't know anything about it, didn't care anything about it. They wanted to get rid of their brother out of jealousy. But it was something that providentially happened that resulted in good. And the good was that it preserved many people alive. God had a purpose that was not seen in the action until after it was all over. Now it may be that some problems we face in life serve a similar kind of purpose, a purpose that God has in mind that you and I can't see from the beginning. If nothing else, the glory of God can be seen in the dignified way that we weather the difficulties and trials that we're called on to face in life. God may have a purpose. That's one reason that bad things might happen to you. Another reason that bad things might happen to you in this life is that you reap what you sow. Some actions have neutral consequences that are unpleasant. Natural consequences that are unpleasant. You do a certain thing, and as a result of that, you reap something that is comparable to that thing. That is, if you do something bad and something bad happens to you, then that's just what happens as a result. And you sow what you reap. Some problems we have are the result of reaping these kind of natural consequences. Consequences for our actions. Paul said in Galatians 6, beginning in verse 7, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man sows, this will he also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption, but the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life." If all choices, both good and bad in life, produce exactly the same effect, how would we ever learn to choose the good and reject the bad? If there were not bad consequences to our bad choices, how would we learn? How would we learn to choose between good and evil? Having personal willpower, people must be allowed to suffer the consequences of their wrong choices in order to learn that what is good is more valuable than what is bad. Much of the Bible is taken up in trying to motivate and persuade people to make the right choices in life and avoid the bad choices. So, you reap what you sow. That's something to think about in trying to answer this question. Further, being affected by other people. This is illustrated in Joshua's declaration. When Joshua says to the people of God, "If it is disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves today who you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served, which were beyond the river, the gods of the Amorites in whose land you're living, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." What is he saying right there? God allows us all the opportunity to choose whether or not we'll serve him. Now, the consequences that come our way based on whatever choice we make are a natural result of the choice we make. And if we are affected by other people, you see that in the verse? Choose the God you want to serve, whether the gods which your father served, which were beyond the river. You want to act like your fathers? You're influenced by your fathers? You want to carry on that tradition? You want to do what they did just because they're your fathers? You want to go the way that they went? Serve those gods? Or you could choose to reject the gods that your father served beyond the river, and you could serve the gods where you're living right now. The people that surround you. Serve their gods. Be like them. But Joshua said, "But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to serve the true and living God. And that's me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord." People have a choice, the opportunity to choose whether or not we'll serve God. And many will make unwise choices to do what God has declared to be wrong. And since we do not live in a glass bubble, we're certain to reap some of the consequences of other people around us making bad choices. Here's an example. In Fairfield, Ohio, just last month, the day after Christmas, a teenage driver has been charged in the death of his 18-year-old passenger, Tristan Lacey, 18, accused of driving under the influence when he lost control and crashed near the Beckett Ridge Golf Club around 4:45 a.m. Saturday. An arrest report showed Lacey's blood alcohol content level was between .08 and .169. Passenger Mark Valentine, 18 years old, was transported to the hospital where he was pronounced dead. Valentine was a senior at Cincinnati Christian School. Lacey was arrested Monday and charged with aggravated vehicular homicide and sale of liquor to an underage person. Does it make any difference who you hang around with? Does it make any difference who you associate with in life? It made a difference for this guy. And he lost his life as a result of hanging around the person who did the wrong thing. That's one of many examples that could be shown that bad things happen to people because they are affected by the behavior of other people. Innocent people could be driving down the highway, and here comes someone who is in a drunken state and can't control his automobile, and he's coming right at you, and you're going 55 miles an hour at him. He's coming 55 miles an hour at you. He crosses the center line and rams right into the front of your car, killing you. Who's at fault? Bad things happen so many times in life because people are affected by the behavior of others. You may be innocent. You may be righteous. You may be a godly person. And your life may be snuffed out by someone who is evil. That's one way. A baby may be born with AIDS or addicted to drugs because of the wrong choices that the parents make. But it's still something bad that happens. And it's something to think about. Bad things happen sometimes because of the behavior of other people. And then, bad things happen sometimes because of natural law. Natural law brings sunshine and on the evil and the good. It brings rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. Matthew 5 and verse 45. The same storm that brings rain to water my garden so that my tomatoes will grow so I can enjoy the fruit of the tomato plants might be the exact same storm that has powerful winds that take someone's life. In the U.S. natural hazard statistics, they provide statistical information on fatalities, injuries, and damages caused by weather-related hazards. These statistics are reported by the National Weather Service. For 2014, floods caused 38 fatalities. Lightning caused 28 fatalities. Tornadoes caused 47 fatalities. Rip currents. 57 people died in rip currents. Wind. Not a tornado, but high winds. 54 people died as a result of high winds. Winter weather, 41. Heat, 20. Cold, 43. All things that are a part of natural law. The nature and the laws of nature and the forces of nature that we live around every day can be hazardous to some people. Who's at fault? When a tornado takes someone's life, is God to blame? Who's at fault? Natural law that's in place. If you jump out of a 57-story skyscraper, you jump out the window, what's going to happen to you? When you hit the sidewalk below, after jumping out of a 57-story building, what's going to happen to you? Are you going to survive? Is it God's fault? You blame God for that? Natural law is in place. We need to know those and respect them, don't we? That's a reason that bad things happen sometimes. And what we're going to call, just for sake of understanding terminology, bad luck. And by luck, we mean the events or circumstances that operate for or against an individual. And I want to direct your attention to Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 11. Here's what Solomon said. I again saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, and the battle is not to the warriors, and neither is bread to the wise, or wealth to the discerning, nor favor to men of ability. You know what he's saying right there? He's saying now, if you're watching for a race. Say you're watching a race on the Olympics, and you know how fast each of the runners is. And you know that the guy from Kenya is faster than anybody else. And you think in your mind, he's the one who's going to win this race. He has the gold medal pretty much sewn up. All he has to do is cross the finish line. He's going to be the fastest one. Let's watch the race. And then somebody from Germany wins the race. Someone who had run before and his time was never as good as the guy from Kenya. What happened? You weren't able to predict that accurately, were you? So he says, the race is not to the swift. It's not always to the swift. The winner of the race is not always the most swift person. The winner of the battle is not always to the greatest warrior. Bread is not always to the one who's wise. Wealth is not always coming to the one who is discerning. What is then? Notice the rest of the verse. For time and chance overtake them all. Time and chance. What's he saying right there? There's an element of chance that is around us. We see and experience unforeseen things, undesigned things, unexpected things, unexplained things, things that are improbable to us. It's improbable to me that anyone would beat that fast as lightning runner from Kenya. That just can't happen. It's improbable. It's something that no one can foresee. But somebody bumped him, he twisted his ankle, he fell on the track, and he got defeated. Unpredictable events in life. Sometimes we suffer bad things because of good or bad fortune. Time and chance. Some people call it luck. When good things happen consistently to a person, he might take on the nickname Lucky. Events or circumstances that operate for or against an individual based on time and chance. A good passage to keep in mind. Maybe all of the combination of these passages that we've thought about this morning can help us discern our way through the question, why do bad things happen to good people? You think? This lesson is not really an attempt to study all of the reasons why suffering is in the world. If we reap good benefits from former generations, the inventions of former generations that have helped man to be more prosperous and more productive, we reap those good benefits of scientific discoveries, of medical technology. There are a lot of good things that happen in life because of the advances of man. Immunizations, cures for diseases that men have discovered through the years. If we reap good benefits of former generations, can we avoid reaping the evil of former generations as well? I think in some cases we can, don't you? It's true that God made the world, and He set in order the laws of nature, but He didn't intend that the laws of nature be misused. You know, why should we blame God? To blame God for the bad things that happen would be somewhat like blaming Henry Ford for every automobile accident. You know, after all, he's the one that started making all those cars for everybody. Or if a plane crashes, can we blame the Wright brothers for developing an airplane to fly in the sky? Would that be the right thing to do? Many times several wrong choices are made by various individuals that result in death to people. But that's not necessarily reason to blame God, is it? Most of what happens in the world is not God's will, if you think about it, is it? He allows it only because he gave man a freedom to choose, a free choice. You can choose whether or not you want to go on floor 57 and jump out the window. You're free to make that choice. But is God righteously blamed when you hit the sidewalk? Because of this freedom, he allows both good consequences and bad. And it's not a perfect world, but it sure beats the other alternative of a world without God, I think, don't you? We do not live in a perfect world. But a time is coming when God's going to set everything perfect and he's going to make everything right. And he's going to administer justice, and he's going to decide between righteous and unrighteous. Acts 17:31, he's fixed a day in which he'll judge the world in righteousness through a man whom he has appointed, having furnished proof unto all men by raising him from the dead. He's going to set things right. Consider the statement that God gave us about the sufferings of this present world. The sufferings of this present world, the bad things that happen to us in life, they're not worthy to be compared with the glory that shall be revealed to us. They're not worthy to be compared. Maybe we're focused too much on bad stuff that happens to us in life. Maybe we are. They're not worthy to be compared with what's going to be revealed in us as God's children. And we have to take some faith here and know that God causes all things to work together for good. We may interpret something to be bad. God may want it to work for good for those who love God and those who are called according to His purpose. So maybe these things will help to answer that type of question. I hope so. If you're in our assembly today and you're not a Christian, we'd like to encourage you to think seriously about the condition of your soul. We'd like to encourage you every way that we can to believe in Jesus Christ, to believe that He's the Son of God and does indeed have the power to save you eternally in His eternal kingdom of joy and bliss. If you'd like to become a Christian today, you can. If you'll confess His name before this assembly, if you will repent of your sins, if you'll be baptized in water for the forgiveness of sins, as the Bible teaches, in cases of conversion all through the book of Acts show to be the case, under the direction of the apostles as they were sent out by Jesus Christ to preach the gospel to the whole world, people were commanded to do those things in order to be Christians. If we can help you with that today, we'd be delighted to. And if we can, please come while we stand together and encourage you by singing number 341.